Hello everyone and welcome to this festive Christmas edition of The Stagey Place with me, Elliot Shepherd, where today I have been interviewing Stephen Markwick, who is the musical director of Queen of Hearts at the Greenwich Theatre in London, which is currently playing until the 2nd of January 2022. Bringing you this Christmas edition, I wanted to do something a little bit more festive than we did last year, so I thought what way to do it than to bring back the spirit of pantomime. Talking to Stephen, it was absolutely fantastic to hear about his previous work, as well as why audiences should come and watch Queen of Hearts. I actually went to go and see the show at the end of November, and it was a fantastic production, which I saw with my friend Tom, and we both absolutely enjoyed it, and I cannot wait for you to hear what Stephen says about the production. So, without further ado, let's get on with the show. Stephen, thank you so much for coming on to The Stagey Place. How are you doing today?
I'm fine, thank you, Elliot.
Very good, very good. We're going to be talking about The Queen of Hearts, which is at the Greenwich Theatre this festive period. But before we actually talk about the show itself, what I want to do is give listeners a bit of a whistle-stop tour about how you became a musical director and what actually inspired you when you were younger to step foot into this direction of the industry.
Sure. Well, I suppose I'm an accidental musical director. A lot of people who are musical directors are, actually. Although these days you can do all sorts of postgraduate courses in musical direction. But in my day, I approached it, like a lot of people, really as a composer and a songwriter myself. So when I started writing for theatre, it just seemed like the logical step to be the musical director as well. And it went from there rather accidentally.
So when you were, let's say, as a composer, what were the steps that you took to become a composer? Was there any courses that you were taking?
Again, I'm so old that in those days there really weren't. But there was one course at the Guildhall, which is the jazz and rock course. And I did that as a composer and arranger. So that was a big move for me, because although I'd done all my grades and all of that, I wasn't a strictly classical musician. So I'd gone to the Guildhall to do this jazz and rock course as a composer and arranger. But before that, I'd always been in bands at school and I'd always done shows at college where I wasn't at a music school at that time. But they needed someone who could organize the music, and I naturally kind of just did that. So I suppose by accident, I fell into musical direction. But my little break, I suppose, well, I had a couple of breaks. I got a song recorded by a pop star in the 80s called Shakin' Stevens. He was a big star in those days, the biggest single-selling UK solo artist. But that was a big surprise, and that was a big leg up for me. And then that's what made me think, well, I ought to maybe go to the Guildhall and get some proper training, because everything I was doing up to then was self-taught. So I did that, and then the next stage for me was entering a competition called the Vivian Ellis Prize for musicals. And I was very fortunate enough to win that. And that, again, put me on a track, a slightly different track, more into the theatre world. And it was through that that I met a man called Dan Crawford, who had started and was running the King's Head Theatre in Islington. He was one of the judges. And he became a sort of mentor to me. I loved him dearly, and I miss him still. And he gave me my first break, I suppose, in theatre. I wrote a musical version of The Secret Garden, which he put on quite a few times, actually, and has had a bit of life elsewhere. Actually, extraordinarily, it's been on in Poland, in Krakow, for, well, about 20 years, but not only in rep, but still it's quite remarkable to think that started from tiny little King's Head Theatre, an audience of about 120 people, and there happened to be a Polish director in one day, and one thing led to another, and apparently it's still on. Well, it hasn't been on obviously since lockdown, but there's a tradition there at the Teatro Bagatella where there's a whole generations of school kids have been forced to go and see my show.
Have you ever Able to see one of the international productions of the show then.
Yes, I've been a couple of times. It's wonderful. Obviously, it's translated and can vaguely follow it. The tunes don't need translating. So, no, that was just a wonderful surprise and a wonderful happy accident. And I was MDing that show, as I say, because it was my own show. And I was MDing that at the King's Head. And then Dan asked me to MD some other things, obviously not write them. And then that started me on a slightly different path where I was just MDing other people's shows. And that's how I sort of ended up doing that. But everything's rather accidental and nothing's particularly planned out. And that's the way I like it. And things just happen and I follow that branch or that bit of that river and I see where it runs to, really.
Yeah, and I think that's amazing as well, because I think that's what happens with a lot of creatives in this industry or performers. You know, we get a chance to do something that we may have never done before and then run with it. And it just branches out with all these different opportunities and new.
So true. It's so true. And I think I realized it taught me a lesson that you just say yes to everything. And obviously it's not everything's going to be wonderful or perfect, but there are going to be, one out of 10 or something, one yes out of 10 is going to really pay dividends. And another example is actually my kids were going to primary school. I was at the school gate. Someone knew I played the piano. I ended up doing some year six shows at the primary school, just to help out. And through that tiny little acorn, I ended up meeting and working with Ray Davies and Noel Gallagher through the Crouch End Festival Chorus, which accidentally all happened because I just happened to say, oh, yeah, sure, I'll do the end of year show. But I can trace it back to that. And you can sort of cut forward in the film to Ray Davies actually in my living room. The most extraordinary set of circumstances I could never have predicted. I could never have hoped something like that would happen. And then the next thing I know, Noel Gallagher and a few of of the choir members are in my kitchen going through Wonderwall and so on because he's going to be doing a concert at the Royal Albert Hall for Teenage Cancer Trust or something. So you never know. And that's how I learned that lesson. Just say yes and see what happens.
And do your kids ever remind you of that? Are they always like, Dad, look, we basically got you that job with Noel Gallagher?
No, but don't, yeah, maybe they will now.
Well, Stephen, today obviously we're talking about the Queen of Hearts, which is at the Greenwich Theatre, like I've said before. But this isn't the first time that you've actually worked with the theatre itself. How did this partnership come about, and when did you start working with the theatre on their shows?
Oh, I did a musical at Greenwich called Sadly Solo Joe, and that was a while ago. I can't remember, about 2002 or something like that. And then Hilary Strong, who was the artistic director at the time, I think they decided to start doing their own pantos shortly after that. I think up until then they'd always been productions that visited. So I got approached, I got asked, I think it was about 2005, maybe, would I like to do it? So it was literally a gig. A one-off gig, although I had, worked at Greenwich before. But yeah, Andrew Pollard, who writes the panto, and at that time he was going to appear as Dame for the first time at Greenwich. And so we just got together and we met for the first time. We got on really well. He's a dear friend now and we just clicked. He's a great connoisseur and curator of comedy routines and the history of routines in the same way that I feel the same about songs, songwriters, not just pop music, musical theatre, opera even, we both share that enthusiasm for the past and the present. And I suppose we found in panto or in the pantos that we started to work on here at Greenwich, we were able to kind of tap into the feeling we both had when we were young kids in the 70s, when you used to crowd around the TV and watch the Morecambe and Wise Christmas show. And it was that feeling that I can remember watching it as a kid with my mum and dad and my grandmother, who was from Canada. So she had no reason to find it particularly relevant, but she just loved it. And it was the highlight of her trips over to the UK. So we kind of bonded over that. And we bonded over the feeling that that brought to people, that particular feeling where you get the whole age range from 8 to 80, and they all find something. When you hit the bullseye, you just know it, and they're all laughing, And there's something for everyone, and it's a wonderful thing. And it doesn't really crop up anywhere else now, especially as, the media world is divided into such small niche kind of tribes. And it's very rare now to get that, but I think it still exists in panto, in good panto. And I like to think we've pulled that off at Greenwich over the years, because we get the same people coming back, the same families. I mean, it's extraordinary. Sometimes we get a shout out, some sort of 18-year-old who you'd think be the last person who'd want to be acknowledged, but has been coming since they were eight. So they feel it's almost a part of this is their Chris, part of their Christmas, and it's part of their family as well.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, isn't it? Because it's all about traditions and about generations of generations of generations. When I used to go to the pantomime, well, I still do go to the pantomime, and I work on pantomimes now as well. But when I used to go to the pantomime, I used to go with my grandparents and then my uncles and then all my cousins and siblings. And it would just be all these generations that have been coming for years and years and years. For you, obviously, for some of the littler kids, this could also be their first time coming to the theatre itself to see a production, and especially to see it with their family. Like, it must be a really exhilarating experience for them to be able to enjoy it with the people that they love. At the end of pantomimes, there's usually like the song sheets, or there's usually some well-known songs that have been arranged differently for pantomimes. For you as a musical director, how beneficial does that feel when you can sometimes hear kids singing the songs or humming the songs after watching the pantomime that you've actually arranged for the show?
Well, yeah, it's very heartwarming, and it's great because you've kind of done your job. Andy and I, Andy's got some nephews, and well, my daughters are probably too old now, but I work a lot in schools. We try and keep aware of, whatever is the latest TikTok thing or whatever it might be. But yes, because we want to include something for the kids coming for the first time. And then, as I say, we want to also include the grandparents so that there's something that's a classic or something, a standard or something that they will recognize as well. That's the goal. I remember I did a lot of shows at Polka Theatre for Children in the 90s with Vicky Ireland, who when she was artistic director there, and she was great. She always remembered the child, and she always, when actors or people were getting a little bit carried away in rehearsals and having fun and making jokes up, she would be the always be the first one to sort of say, "Oh no, but the child thinks that that really is a rabbit," so it always kind of remind us of that. I try and think of that. Certainly, I remember the experience of taking my kids to theatre, and it was mainly to Polka, I have to say, and just try and put yourself in their shoes for a bit so that when you're told something on the stage or when you see something on stage, you believe it, and maybe not treat everything as a sort of grown-up irony or whatever it might be.
And for families or any audiences coming to watch Queen of Hearts, what can they expect from the show?
Well, hopefully they'll expect the usual Greenwich mixture of fun and intelligence and anarchy. And I like to think we managed to be at the traditional and also a bit modern at the same time. It's a hard thing sometimes to pull off, but I like to think that's what would be. And the big change this year is that they will see the band on stage, which
Amazing.
is the first time in 15 years. So Uncle Steve has legs, and will be Uncle Steve's legs will be seen.
And will you be roped into any of action on stage?
Oh, of course, absolutely. No, I've got lines, Elliot, official lines, and I've got a costume, and
Very
I've even
nice.
persuaded them to give me a microphone.
And how do you feel about the prospect of doing that? Was that something that you actually petitioned for, or was that something that you were just given?
Well, it's something I've done before, to be honest. I've done before in actor muso shows, so it's not completely alien to me. And Andy's seen me do it, and it was something that I didn't petition for it, but it was something that, yeah, just emerged this year as we were putting it together.
That's amazing. And so what was the decision behind actually getting the band on stage?
Well, of course, we're normally in the pit, and we're doing it with a smaller cast this year. Well, for obvious COVID-related reasons, budget reasons, and all that. So I suppose it was the thought that if we put the band on stage, it's a different look, it's a different feel, and it would certainly sort of tell everyone that this isn't exactly the same template that we've been doing in previous years. So, we haven't got a Revolve this year, obviously, because of the drum kit and all of the instruments and so on. So we're using one sort of one generic set, which allows us actually to go in a different way. So we're using greater depth on of the stage because we haven't got the Revolve. The front of the stage, which is obviously where the pit normally is, that's covered. So it's quite different, really. It's very exciting.
And it's definitely a yes opportunity, like we said earlier on, a yes opportunity to spruce it up a little bit and bring some more action. And obviously that will also allow younger audiences who maybe also want to be musicians, maybe, let's say, be able to see the work actually being done on stage rather than underneath the stage or in the pit as usual pantomimes go. Talking about younger audiences, they may see you on stage, Stephen, being the musical director, and be like, oh, I really want to potentially in the future do the job that this man that I'm seeing on stage is doing. For you, what advice would you give to younger people who want to venture into the world of composing or being a musical director?
Well, obviously go and see as much as possible and listen to as much as possible. But the main advice, I think there's an element of musical direction which is slightly sort of psychological almost. You have to understand all the different people that are involved in a production. So your main job is to make everyone is look and sound as good as possible. And that can take a variety of tactics and strategies. So think about that. And the other thing I'd say is that if you're the type of musician who just loves, say, his or her bass playing and wants to just practice bass and get all the different tones and all the different ways of playing it, which is wonderful, to the exclusion of other things, then probably MDing isn't the thing for you. I think the ND is a sort of jack of all trades, master of none in a way. You've got to be able to listen to and talk to all the different elements, whether that be musical or theatrical. So you take in the whole picture in a way to the detriment of your own playing sometimes, because you're not important. Your playing is important, obviously, but it's not the most important thing. You've got to make sure that all the parts, the sum of the parts, greater. The whole is greater than the sum of the parts. And you've got to make sure that you can talk to all the different players. So you want to be able to understand a little bit about, the flute or the trumpet or the drums or whatever it is. But also you've got to be able to talk to the actors, some of whom might not be comfortable singing or might not realize how good they are at singing, or actually occasionally might think they're the bee's knees at singing and and maybe aren't, So there's all kinds of things going on which contribute to the overall musical performance. And I think you've got to have that mind where you're looking at the bigger picture and you're serving, you want to serve the piece. Other people can get wrapped up in their own little worlds, which is great, and be experts at whatever it is they do. But you, to be the musical director, I think you've just got to stand back and take a wider view, a bigger perspective.
Yeah,
So
absolutely.
I would say listen to everything and try and understand where everyone is coming from.
Absolutely. I think it's so important, because you basically are the front man almost for these musicians. Like you say, you want to make sure everybody sounds great and as good as they can be. You've really got to be like the leader and understand what works for the kind of instruments that you've got going on in the show.
Yeah, I think that from the psychology point of view, you've just got to be able to talk to actors and help actors and make them feel as comfortable and happy as possible, whether they are, in their view, singers or not. I suppose the one thing I learned was the best performers aren't necessarily the best singers, and a lot of the songs are put over, by terrific performers who probably don't think they're the best singers and probably aren't the best singers, but there's something about the different needs that are required. We're not doing a singing contest, we're not doing a classical concert. It's all about overall theatrical experience works.
Absolutely. And I'm sure that is what we'll be like in the Queen of Hearts this year. at the Greenwich Theatre. Thank you so much, Stephen, for talking about the show. I've got one final question for you, though, before we end this podcast today. And it is, of course, the name of the podcast itself. It's The Stagey Place. And what I want to ask you, Stephen, is whereabouts your stagey place is. So this could be the place that you first watched a bit of theatre when you were a child and actually inspired you to come into the industry. It could be the place where you first had your first piece of work in. It could be the King's Head, like we said, as you first starting out. It could be the Assembly, the end of year production that then spiraled into your story with Noel Gallagher. Or it could be that venue in Poland that is currently staging and has been staging for years and years, the Secret Garden. So, Stephen, for you, whereabouts is your stagey place?
Can I have two?
You can absolutely have two. Yeah, that's absolutely no worries.
Well, actually, the first one is an experience. I remember at primary school, the eighth I am, in a music hall, year six type show, and I suddenly thought I quite enjoy doing that. So that was a moment. And then I would have to say it's the dear old King's Head, round about late 80s, early 90s. That would be my stagey place where I learned a lot without realizing it at the time, both in terms of writing and composing songs, and also MD and working with actors.
Well, Stephen, that is the end of the episode today. Thank you so much for coming onto the podcast to talk about the Queen of Hearts and to talk about all those fascinating opportunities that you've had. And like we say, it's just all about saying yes to do things, because it's the one out of 10 yeses that really then spiral into something more greater and more rewarding in a way. And it's so fantastic to hear the journey that you've gone on and the relationship that you've been having with the Greenwich Theatre and with Andrew, who is also performing in the Queen of Hearts this year. It's a fantastic journey that you've been on, and thank you so much for taking your time today to chat with me.
Thank you. You're welcome. Thank you, Elliot.
And there we go. That was our interview with Stephen Markwick from Greenwich Theatre's Queen of Hearts, which is currently playing until the 2nd of January 2022. The Stagey Place will return for one final episode before the year is out. But until then, I hope you have a very Merry Christmas, and I look forward to hear from you soon.